this is the nicest audience I have ever had to come in such circumstances for a talk of mine. Is really something I want to get. You know, there is a great difference. Some of you may have read a book of mine, and there is a great difference between writing and talking. If you have read the book, you will see that I do my very best never to use the word or the pronoun I in my books. But this one is a personal talk because it goes about a book I have written. And of course, here I will have to use the pronoun I on many occasions. This does not mean that when I do not use the pronoun I in my writings, that it is gospel truth. It is, of course, always my opinion. But I have felt that there is a great difference between I, this and that when you just put it in the neutral way so that it flows for the reader. It makes a great difference. So I, on the 8th of May 1940, being 5 years old, was standing on a chair in our living room in Belgium, in Flanders. My mother was dressing me. And there was the passage with the front door open and the sunlight was pouring in on that morning of the 8th of May. And then while she was dressing me, my mother all at one side, you know, it's war. I never forget that moment. Of course, then I could not have thought that one day I would sit here or that I would have written a book or sit here to talk about it. Why have I written this? Because I wanted to make the statement. The statement of what Sri Aurobindo and the mother have done of such an immense importance in those years for humanity. How important was it? One can seldom read a more forceful and assertive text by Sri Aurobindo than the following. In a letter to a disciple at that moment in the ashram, I affirm again to you most strongly that this is the mother's war. It is a struggle for an ideal that has to establish itself on earth in the life of humanity. For a truth that has yet to realize itself fully, and against a darkness and falsehood that are trying to overwhelm the earth and mankind in the immediate future. It is the forces behind the battle that have to be seen, and not this or that superficial circumstance. It is a struggle for the liberty of mankind to develop, for conditions in which men have freedom and room to think and act according to the light in them and grow in the truth, grow in the spirit. There cannot be the slightest doubt that if one side wins, there will be an end of all such freedom and hope of light and truth, and work that has to be done will be subjected to conditions which would make it humanly impossible. There will be a reign of falsehood and darkness, a cruel oppression and degradation for most of the human race, such as people in this country, in India, do not dream of and cannot yet at all realize. If this is not worthwhile considering being Aurobindonians, then I don't know what is. The victory of one side, the Allies, would keep the path open for evolutionary forces. The victory of the other side would drag back humanity, degrade it horribly, and might lead even, at the worst, to its eventual failure as a race, as others in the past evolution failed and perished. So let's not forget that in 1942, Sri Aurobindo said, there was a 50-50% chance that the black forces would win. He has always said, I am not working by the Superman force. I am working with the forces pro and contra, hostile and amical to the divine. And at that time they fought it out. With the, at stake, the humanity, the destiny of humanity. If we belong to that movement, at least it is worth to remember. The mother said later, there was such a constant tension for Sri Aurobindo and me during the war that it interrupted the yoga completely during the whole war. And it was for that reason that the war had come, to stop the work. For there was an extraordinary descent of the supermind at that time, 38, 39. It came like this, and she made a massive gesture. That was exactly in 39, she said. Then the war has come and has stopped everything completely. For if we personally had gone on with the work, we would not have been sure that we had the time to finish it before the other one had made a mess of the world and the whole affair would have been postponed for centuries. That had to be stopped first of all, the action of the Lord of Nations, of the Lord of Falsehood. That's why I wrote this book. I had written a chapter in Beyond Man. I have left it as it is in the reprints, although I do not agree with some things. This is normal when it evolves, but this is the statement I want to make. And one can see this whole event on the short term, in the short term perspective, and in the long term perspective. In the short term of the life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, of the work of the avatar, who did that important intervention. Before the First World War, before he wrote the Arya, and during the first year, Sri Aurobindo has often supposed that the time had come for the great change in science, in this, in that, in everything. There had been Nietzsche, these new ideas, whom he knew Nietzsche so well. He appreciated him very much. There had been Bergson, who Sri Aurobindo had read and knew very well. There had been a whole movement of spiritual and spiritist action. There had been the discoveries of Bose, the Indian scientist, of life in the metal fatigue and all that. Sri Aurobindo thought that the time had come. And I could have quoted hundreds of passages from his work where he says, this new spirit has come. This means that he, being the avatar, he and the mother always together, of course, did not think or realize what an anti-force was awaiting the work that they were trying to do. In Sri Aurobindo's thinking, there is a whole evolution. And he has said very clearly, the avatar and the vibhuti have the knowledge which are necessary for their work. And once somebody asked the question, yeah, if mother was on the earth at the time of Rome and the time of the Buddha, didn't she know what was happening there? Sri Aurobindo says the avatar doesn't function like that. He comes to do a job, he has the knowledge for the job, although of course behind is all the knowledge which he could want, and this is so important, if you see the deification or divination of Christ, and now the deification divination of the young mother, the young Sri Aurobindo, and so on, it is always put in an absolute perspective. So at that moment then came in the 20th century these two wars of which the mother has said is one war. First World War, Second World War. Second World War being the continuation of the First one. And all hell broke loose, literally. Because the First World War, people have very little remembrance of that, but my own father was a soldier in that war. It was such an incredible catastrophe for Europe. A whole generation of young people were killed just like that, mauled away, thousands, hundreds of thousands. And the ones who remained were maimed, invalids, missing a leg, this, that. In French they called them les gueules cassées, the broken faces. Les gueules cassées, that was the generation that remained. So that whole First World War, the mother has said, was the vital forces descending on the earth. And what happened after the war? Historically, roaring 20s, this, that, a wave of irrationalism. What was carried on that? Fascism, anti-reason, the deed, we are that, nationalists, we are the Italians, we are the Spanish, we are the French. Don't forget, my dear friends, that Hitler could as well have come up in France as in Germany, seen from a certain perspective. And many expected him there. There was a very intense French nationalist movement, which in fact had the completely same vision, and which of course was the support of Vichy France. How all this is worked out, you know? We did not do that. But there, after the First World War, this wave of irrationalism, and that was then the time that Sri Aurobindo was fighting to get the tale of the supermind, as he wrote humoristically to Nirodbaran, as you can read in his correspondence. One of the incredible books of literature in the spiritual field, which one doesn't find anywhere else. The truth spoken with a smile and with a great sense of humor to somebody who hardly understood anything. And that is what I always have so much admired in Nirodbaran. He never took any airs. He says, I do not know. He did not know how and why he was writing his poetry. He wanted to be a literary gent, because there was Dilip Kumar Roy, and there was this one, and there was the other one. Nirodbaran was a medical doctor. And he wanted to participate. They had their tea together, and he wanted to talk about literature. English knowledge, very little, although he had been educated in Edinburgh. And poetry. And Sri Aurobindo made a poet of him. And he wrote these poems, some of which are incredible, and surrealistic, but still so occult and spiritual. At a certain moment, he said, yesterday I tried to write a poem, and I fell asleep. Sri Aurobindo said, bravo, if you have not had a poem, you have at least invented a soporific. So this whole thing happened, the Second World War, and then came after the First World War, and in 1938, read Amalkiran, read what I have quoted in Beyond Man and in other books, the descent, manifestation. There is a difference between descent and manifestation. A descent is occasional. Manifestation is permanent. The manifestation of the supermind was expected. 38. Munich. Hitler at his highest, at the zenith. Munich, Czechoslovakia, Mussolini in full flower. All these events took place at that moment. The doors were opening for the Second World War. 38 November, the 23rd or the 24th, early at night, early, Sri Aurobindo broke his tie. You imagine that? And if I later asked, was that possible? You attacked and successfully, he says, it was the night before the darshan. 24th, he says, I was protecting so much the mother that I forgot about myself. And he broke his tie with all the consequences of it. 39, the war started. Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia. Later, this was the Drolbegeer when the two were at war without actually fighting on the Maginot Line and so on and so on. And then the whole slaughterhouse. The real world war, what has been there quite localized, now became the real world. This is the short perspective. How then they acted for 5 years. There was such a constant tension that we could not go on with the yoga. We had, and Sri Aurobindo has said the same thing in one of his texts, but I cannot go on reading, otherwise we sit here again till 12 o'clock. So I have asked my friend Norbert to bring orange cardboard. If I speak too aggressively or too long, he should put it up to remind. You have brought So then there is the long perspective. Of the importance, I mean, of the importance of the work of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, of which I wanted to make a statement. I wanted that to be known, especially in the very first place, to disciples of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. What is the second perspective? Here we go again. The divine, plunging into its opposite, of which are symbolic, but also very practical, the four asuras, the expression. You know, in the Bible they have one, Satan, the fallen angels who revolted against God. What that is the mother story, they got so impressed by their own ego that they took a distance from God. Distance means fall. Four is the number of establishment. Four. So here, this is absolute darkness. And the mother turned toward the divine, what I have done is, nothing is manifested or done except by the mother. They are my sons. And you find all these things in Gnosticism very concretely. They were aware of this. And she said, I turned toward the divine. I said, what shall I do? He says, put your love here, in the inconscient. In the inconscient, put your love there, put your soul there, the great mother, and that will create the possibility of the evolution. The possibility of we having a soul, of our having a soul, and becoming later, when that soul, that evolutionary psychic being around the spark, takes shape and will take shape concretely in a new matter, in a new world, in a supramental one. Here, the inconscient is absolute darkness. Sri Aurobindo has described it hundreds of times. You start reading Savitri, you do this, it is everywhere. Absolute negation. Then, My question is, if it is absolute negation, how can there be evolution? Four asuras, death, suffering, darkness, ignorance, absolutely against that. Two solutions possible, to wipe them out or that they are retracted into their origin. They are acting now, and I am not ascribing the rain to one of them. But they are acting in all of us because it is the evolution that we have to, by yoga, master in ourselves. And there is such a misunderstanding that the yoga is going there and being in the sunny fields. It is part of that, but the integral yoga of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother is mastering this. But if that is absolute, then how can there be evolution? They are the masters of the world. That's a very important thing. So then you see how, if you look back in the known history, which is only 10,000 years of what Sri Aurobindo and the Mother say is this long human history with many civilizations before, which have built up, contributed their contribution to the evolution, so much so that now we are at that moment that everything makes sense and can go on to something different. Now, you see, from that perspective, it is another approach of the incredible importance of what we represent, where we are, what we belong to, for what we are living. So this, how can that evolve? How can this matter become vital? How can it become mind? How can it become psychic? Because inside there is something carrying it. Inside there is something directing these actions of the hostile forces, whatever name you give them. The negative forces who have their basis here. And Sri Aurobindo says all their actions are justified. It's very difficult to take that. All their actions are justified because there is nothing else than that. And they are also that. And if we are in that situation, it is we are also that. And when Nirodhvaran complained to Sri Aurobindo in one of his bad moods, Sri Aurobindo says, you are a nice one, now you are complaining. But you have chosen to be what you are. Because you are God. You are the divine. You are that. And if you are in the evolution, it is that that has chosen to be involved. You have no reason to complain. That, of course, people cannot understand. And Sri Aurobindo has said very bluntly, the justification of the existence of the universe as we have, of the difficulties, the suffering and all that, is not explainable to the human mind. In the riddle of the world, he had just said, right. So, all these things are happening. This is the short perspective, 20th century. The long perspective, we are at the moment that this whole, the meaning of all that either was fulfilled or fell back for centuries, if not for thousands of years, if not in the human race permanently. If this is not worth stating, then I don't know what is. It's about the essence of the yoga we are doing. It's about the essence of the meaning of our life. It's about the essence of the work of Sri Aurobindo of the Mother. And if they have succeeded, it is about the essence of the possibilities for which all this is built and we are continuing. That is the importance of the whole undertaking. So then I had to write the book. I had made the decision conditionally for myself. And I went to Europe with a little money, and I went to Köln, and I went to Amsterdam, and I went to London, and I went to Lille in France to see whether I could assemble the literature. Because here, of course, the problem is that we do not have a library. We have a library, but it's a library made of donations. But if you want to do that, you have to stand very firmly on your two historical feet. Otherwise, you make not yourself ridiculous, you make Fiorovino and the mother ridiculous. That is always the condition and the thought when you are writing about them. And I assure you, when I was writing Beyond Man, and still nowadays, when I was writing Beyond Man, 100 times I have said, why do I have to write this? Because you know, if you bring your text into public, that there will be reactions and all that. See now, so many years later, and for all that, I can only be grateful. It's never a matter of bestsellers or whatever, and I do never push my own works, but they are going their way. And it happens so often that somebody comes and says, George, thank you very much. I have read The Mother. I have read Beyond Man. It has done me so much. It has touched me. And then you are encouraged to continue. But when I was going to write this one, this was a huge problem. Because how do I put this in front of an intellectual, non-Aurobindonian public? I was saying, see, Aurobindo has won the Second World War. This, of course, for them, immediately makes you drop into the basket of the sectarians. Next week I will have to talk about that, about the battles in science and this kind of view. This is a huge problem. How do I do that? So the only answer was, I have to be very well founded historically. So much so that I must at least think the fellow who has written this is a reasonable being. And he knows a little what he is writing about. Only then can I bring Fiorovino and Mother, I am the same reasonable fellow. So maybe it might be worth reading or considering what I have written here also. And this is the reason that this book is divided into 3 parts. The first two, Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, are not even named. And I must say, I have had very favorable reactions, even from university professors, about that. And then in the third part comes the vision of Hitler, the vision of Sri Aurobindo. Hitler had that vision? This was my big problem, the second one, first gathering the literature. The second one was the general ignorance about the Second World War. Absolute ignorance. People have heard something 10 years ago, and most of these are the sensational things that made the news. Hitler and his nephew. Hitler homosexual. Hitler having only one testicle. Hitler being, through hypnotic suggestion, made to do all these things he has done. These are the things they are hearing. The second part is, and Martin will know that also very well, is the fact that mostly people like to dive into occult stories. So many Tibetans found in a circle in Berlin with Hitler and all these things. So I had to make the trial historical, non-historical. about the books. I had misjudged the whole situation so much in such a naive way, which I only discovered, that I only discovered later, how little I knew to start when I undertook the job. Because then I had to buy my books via the internet. It has cost me all my money, because this is very costly, not only the book, but also the postage from England, from France, from Germany. And there is a kind of interaction when you read this. Actually, you have such nice conversations with the authors. I am very often alone, apparently, but you have the most interesting conversations with good authors. And I had to read all the good ones to write this for Sri Aurobindo and the mother, not for me. Not to make Sri Aurobindo and the mother ridiculous. And little by little you see what are the essential works. And I think I got most of them, I think almost all. And that is how I wrote this. And when I wanted to talk to people, I never had an answer. Very often, oh my God, that fellow and the war and Hitler. Germans did not want to remember. There are many here in Oroville who have one or other connection with the war. My friend Peter is born during the war. What a traumatic experience. Others have a father, an uncle, a grandfather. And we will see what happened after the war, who made that talking impossible for Germans. French have totally forgotten or are not informed about what has happened during the Second World War. Vichy and all these things, these are just words. And then all the others, it's a matter of mostly occult interest, vague remembrances. So there I never got anywhere. I had to do the whole job myself. And this made me realize how ignorant I was and am and will remain, and I think how most human beings are. I have read 500 books, more or less, during 3.5 years. I have been writing 1.5 years. Even when I am a heart patient, even when I didn't feel well, still I went to my desk and continued. Because once you stop, it may be a trick to take you away from your job. I continued. In all circumstances, after 1.5 years, after 1 year, you have to read again what you have written in the beginning. As 1 year ago, the whole time you are with it, I have not read another book during these 5 years. It took a huge amount of vitality out of me, which is one of the reasons that sometimes I have a little difficulty in talking. And then there was something that amazed me. I had not expected that. And this was an inner resistance in Aurobindonian circles. And here I have to speak concretely, otherwise it has no meaning. For instance, I have made a selection from the mother's entretien, questions and answers, which is published by the ashram, already second impression or thing. It is, people are very much interested. Nat Carney was always recommending that book, because it is very accessible. People cannot read the Life Divine or the Synthesis of Yoga, but the mother's talks they can read. So what I did was taking out the big interesting passages and put them together under headings, starting with the divine, going through the whole of life and coming with the supermind. 20 chapters. And then this book I have translated into Dutch, all everything. It was first published into Dutch. Karl took all the references and put them in English, which I didn't like, because I am not at all agreeable to the English of the translation of the entretien. But he did it, and it is good. But it is not there in French, in the original mother's language. Why? Because there was a chapter on the war. These holy people in Pondicherry did not like that. So that the mother's entretien, this thing is not there in the original language. That's number one. The second one is, for instance, I needed an important book from America. I cannot have Amazon from America because they are always lost. So Julian Lyons bought it for me and gave it to somebody, a very lovely lady. Hitler's photo on the cover, and she had to fly with that. So first she didn't want to bring it. It was a very important book by George Mosse, which I have often quoted. Then what did she do? She took a blessings packet, I don't know where this blessing came from, put it on Hitler's face, and the airplane did not crash. Yeah. Third one, Sabda is not selling the book. I don't know why. Nobody is giving me any reason. You cannot get it from Sabda. You can have it in Vaak, you can have it in Focus. In Oroville, nobody is selling my books because of sectarian reasons from long ago. That's the third one. And the fourth one was, and this did me very much pain, this was that an honorable institution here in Oroville, after I had published the book, people were asking me, why don't you give the talk which I am giving now here today? We would like to know how this has come about and all that. So I proposed to that honorable institution to give the talk. Boom, I got the door on my nose and say, you go somewhere else, here we want to concentrate on Savitri. Now I ask you, what is the eighth book of Savitri about? What are the last books in the battle with death about? I am sorry, this is Sri Aurobindo and Mother, and these people from that honorable institution where I had given several talks should at least know that I only work and live for that. These are concrete instances, you know, otherwise it sounds so abstract that it doesn't mean anything. But we should not forget that during the war, Sri Aurobindo had to speak these incredible words, if the ashram has to be closed, I will close it myself. I will not admit that the cause is the Hitler sympathizers in the ashram. How many were there? More than half. In spite of the declarations of the mother, that French lady, and in spite of the contribution to that funds in Madras, to that funds of the Viceroy, the public declarations Jester Sri Aurobindo had made in his letters, the explanations, one of which I have started my talk with reading, the most forceful things in his whole battle, in their whole battle, they stood alone. Among the own ashram. So the things I have said are understandable. They hurt a little and so on. But I go to something essential. And this is the matter of the yoga we are doing. And they are essential because most of it is now, at the time that we are here, now compared always with traditional yogas. And the results expected are those of traditional yogas. And there is a huge pressure from inside and from outside to keep there in a recognizable way of doing yoga. We are sitting and having meditation. We have a fire, we have incense, we have dancing, we have brotherly love, brotherly and sisterly love. It is being watered down. Because of an external pressure from the instances which are deciding about us. They thought, hey, what are you doing? Oh, you are a nice fellow. There are no uniforms, there are no gurus, there are no ceremonies in the integral yoga. What is the integral yoga about? Very important question, and I think we should come back once on that. What is it about? Can you tell me what is the integral yoga about? Yeah, about reaching the supermind. Because, you know, Michael Murphy, with all sympathy and due respect, when he made his sketch, starts with matter, then the vital, and then the mind, and then the supermind. This is for much, much, much later. And as I said last time, Sri Aurobindo has added a whole chapter in his Synthesis of Yoga, the 13th chapter, just with warnings. Please, if you have some light, if you have that feeling all at once that makes you cry when you are alone or something, a great, excellent, but do not think that it is the supermind. It is very essential for the yoga which we are doing. And there I will go. Now you should put up your orange cartoon. To the last point, in Oroville we have an institution called the House of Mother's Agenda. And we have another one called Savitri Baba. And now my question is, where is the House of the Life Divine? And this should be, I think, what the University of Human Unity should be. Because the agenda has mostly spread so much because of stories and sayings about this and about that. But at the foundation, at the ground of it, is Sri Aurobindo's vision and power. And the mother came from time to time with a sentence which she had discovered or heard in a reading, in a text of Sri Aurobindo. This is what I am doing. Everything is there. Savitri is a story. And I have already written in Beyond Man that there is a great possibility that Savitri will fill up a religious gap to which the people are aspiring. People want religion, they want something, you know, to hold on. A story. Why am I here? The explanation accord all that. Savitri, of course, I do not mean anything negative, but it is a story. And this story is understandable. But the whole basis of the agenda and the mother's yoga in the last 17 years and of Savitri is, by way of speaking, the Life Divine, by which I mean the vision and the realization of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. Between brackets, in our Aurobindonian movement, is it not unbelievable that the last 17 years of the Mother's Yoga just have been put aside by the ashram of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother? The books were forbidden. I have heard now that I have come. I don't know. I have not been there. I have not seen it. The last 17 years of the Mother's Yoga, the highest of which he has come, the years of the transformation and the realization and all that, that this has just been discarded because of some personal political reasons, all these things happen. So now, there I stop. I do not mean anything negative. I just want to make a kind of analysis from certain situations as they will happen, as they are happening here, as they have happened everywhere. When there is a big, great movement, all kinds of situations come up. all kinds of attitudes, all kinds of that. And everything is going very well. And I have an absolute faith in Auroville, because quite simply everything depends on the force that is holding it up, of which there is a physical channel in the Matrimandir, which I have experienced on several occasions, but that is for another way. But then, talking about the yoga, and that's where we have come now, I think it is worthwhile quoting that great citation from Sri Aurobindo about Rudra. I wanted to finish my former talk with that, but then it was 12:17 and I dropped it. Not till the time spirit in man is ready can the inner and ultimate prevail over the outer and immediate reality. Christ and Buddha have come and gone, but it is Rudra who still holds the world in the hollow of his hand. And meanwhile, the fierce forward labor of mankind, tormented and oppressed by the powers that are profiteers of egoistic force and their servants, cries for the sword of the hero of the struggle and the word of the prophet. This is the prophetic Sri Aurobindo, the Sri Aurobindo of the hour of God. Rudra still holds the world in his hand. In the meantime, this must immediately be added, something essential has changed. 1956. Now, Sri Aurobindo and the mother had gone through this incredible battle of 5 years, attention, this, that, and all the things she has. She said to Satpram, what is happening on this thing, you cannot tell anybody. And I will come back to one of these facts. 5 years of the fight. So much so that before it, the protagonist broke his thigh. And at the end, still it is there. But let's not forget that when Hitler had been defeated and Sri Aurobindo asked these words, which by way of speaking always sound into my ears, where is Hitler now? After the war, where is Hitler now? He who had said he should be bombed out of existence. Sri Aurobindo, Hitler should be killed. This is another way of seeing, because behind it, you just see what Sri Krishna did in the Mahabharata. How did he behave? What did he do for the necessity of the moment? And Sri Aurobindo has all the time compared the Second World War, the 20th century World War, to Kurukshetra, Mahabharata. And he compares the yoga we have to do, the work we have to do, to a Mahabharata of the Mahabharata. In the details, in the big things, you know, there is a big difference between that and leaning on tradition to have. It is so nice to read the Tao Te King or Tao Te Ching, however you pronounce it. It's such beautiful, elevating literature. You read the sayings of the Zen masters. You can do, you breathe another air. But it's always in nature. When it rains, in the mountains, with the storks, and the bamboo. It's always romantic yoga. And this is not, again, meant pejoratively to these great masters. But what one takes up nowadays is always the romantic yoga. The people who remain there and cannot come to Auroville because Auroville was dirty, it was too low. And this attitude of looking down is still there. Auroville is for an outing. is the romantic yoga, which very easily gets lost in its own illusions. This is a yoga of reality, in the fight. And if Sri Aurobindo says, my wounds are 1,001 and the Titan kings assail, this was not imagination. It was reality. Sri Aurobindo did not write imagination. After his yogic realizations, of course, his first one in England was. So then he says, it is not enough that our own hands should remain clean and our souls unstained for the law of strife and destruction to die out in the world. It's not enough that we should remain at a distance and pure. That which is its root must first disappear out of humanity. And humanity is us. The battle nowadays is not so much, it's too much between people and factions, but this is, the battle is here. He says, this yoga is a spiritual battle. Its very attempt raises all sorts of adverse forces. He says, it's a war of our members, and by members he means the components of our personality. It's a battle, a long war with ourselves and with opposing forces around us, which, while it lasts, may well seem interminable. And Sri Aurobindo and Mother have always been so straightforward. When somebody wanted to join the ashram, they always informed, do you really want? Are you ready for it? Because it's a long and very difficult yoga. And you have, for instance, the splendid example of the reminiscences of Pavitra. Pavitra learned mind of the Ecole Polytechnique, who was a chemist, who had been through the First World War in the artillery, who had gone to Japan, who had had the courage to go to the monasteries in Mongolia, and then who came here. And he is one of the only ones to whom Sri Aurobindo talks about science. You should read these 2-3 pages where Sri Aurobindo, what an insight he had in science, the whole science, Vedic times and modern times together. He was always the synthesis. He was always the total side, the integrality, the Purna Yoga. And you should read these pages with Pavitra coming there. Sri Aurobindo receives him time after time, and at one point said, Pavitra, I would like to stay here. Sri Aurobindo says, are you sure? Because, and Pavitra said, yes. And he said, I bowed at the feet of the master and everything was settled. They have always said that is a difficult yoga for the ones who want to do that. Ours is a sadhana which involves not only devotion or union with the divine, or a perception of him in all things, but also action as workers and instruments, and the work to be done in the world, or a force to be brought into the world under difficult conditions. It does not seem to me that X, a disciple, is wrong in seeing it in the same problem, are seeing in it the same problem as at Kurukshetra. So then, of course, you have the Gita. And that wonderful book, The Essays of the Gita, is the one I, together with the human, the social works, is the one I hear most or read most, least cited. quoted, read. And Sri Aurobindo writes in Essays on the Gita, Krishna calls upon Arjuna to carry on war of the most terrible kind, and by his example encourage men to do every kind of human work, sarva karmani. Do you contend, he writes to this disciple, that Krishna was an unspiritual man and that his advice to Arjuna was mistaken or wrong in principle? And he gives the creed of the Aryan fighter. And this creed says, know God, know thyself. This is so much what the Greeks, it was written in the Temple of Delphi, know then thyself. It is in all spiritual undertakings, know thyself and you will know the world and God. Know God, know thyself, help man. Protect the right. Do without fear or weakness or faltering thy work in the battle of the world. For without heroism man cannot grow into the Godhead. Courage, energy and strength are among the very first principles of the divine nature in action. And the mother has, still today, made printed in the notebooks of the children, students of the ashram school, make of us the hero warriors we aspire to become. May we fight successfully the great battle of the future that is to be born against the past that seeks to endure, so that the new things may manifest and we be ready to receive them. And then there is Savitri. O soul, intruder in nature's ignorance, armed traveler to the unseen supernal heights, thy spirit's fate is a battle and ceaseless march against invisible opponent powers. Adventurer through blind, unseeing time, a forced advance through a long line of lives, it pushes its spearhead through the centuries, across the dust and mire of the earthly plain, on many guarded lines and dangerous fronts, in dire assaults, in wounded slow retreats, or holding the ideals battered forth, or fighting against odds in lonely posts. He is addressing the soul. Through peril and through triumph and through fall, in serried columns with a struggling rear, marches the army of the way-lost God. Who is the way-lost God? Is the essence of Gnosticism, the soul that has descended into matter. And there, is there tea after that? So everything I am saying here is, in fact, why did I write the book? And I think it's a very fundamental reason. Of course, first of all, there is the statement, what Sri Aurobindo and the mother have done. Not what I find so much interesting, of course, because I am so touched, taken by it, enthusiastic about it. I do not mean anything negative in any way, but one just has to see the reality sometimes. And then there is something very important about which we might talk another time after the summer months. and that is the new Dharma. Have you heard? 3 minutes. Have you heard about the new Dharma? Ah. The old Dharma, this is a disciple, it comes from Sri Aurobindo. I always try to, I hope I don't interpret too much myself, to just present Sri Aurobindo. I have no other. There is a disciple writing to him during the war. Sri Aurobindo says, "You are judging according to the new Dharma." I read the text. "The modern ideas on the subject, the right of all to liberty, both individuals and nations, the immorality of conquest and empire, are new values. An evolutionary movement. This is a new Dharma which has only begun slowly and initially to influence practice." Has only begun. "An infant Dharma, very small, which would have been throttled for good if Hitler succeeded in his avataric mission. Avataric mission and established his new religion over all the earth. The best will be if a new world order evolves, even if at first stumblingly and incompletely, which will make the old things impossible, a difficult task, but not absolutely impossible." Rudra. So the new Dharma is the Dharma of no ego, non-ego, non-egoistic. The old Dharma is, I conquer, I take. I have. Everywhere. It's the Dharma of the ego. And this is not only for empires. It's not only for towns or ships. It's also in interpersonal relations. I. So, gradually, through the coming of the avatar, there is that infusion of a new vision. Mother said, "Nous voulons une race sans ego." We want a race without ego. And this is what is written also in these notebooks of these children and all that. And of course, there has been the whole very important movement of the flower children and the new ego. And mother was the first to say, the way the American youth is going, let them do, it is of importance. She was the first to say in France, 68, May 68, these are all the 60s, it is not a revolt, it's a revolution. So she saw these things happening, we tried to establish the new Dharma. Everybody in humanity, according to what Sri Aurobindo has worked out in the ideal of human unity, where he does that very important thing of discerning between liberty, equality, and fraternity. And he says fraternity is not the right word, it's a unity of soul. And like that, I have always felt here in Oroville, when I heard, we must be one. We must be one. It was like that when I came here 30 years ago. I'm sorry, we are one. We have to discover our unity. Humanity is one. It has to discover its unity, and it has done that now to a very high degree, which was totally unthinkable when Sri Aurobindo wrote the Arya 1914-1921. Why did I write this book? Because I wanted the statement to be made of these things, of the importance of that moment, and behind the importance is a whole world vision, which is, I think, our vision. And this is what I have tried to say. And then later, I will go on a little about how I have written it. Have a nice tea.